Last week at our BIPOC sit on Sunday, we talked about the three characteristics in Mahayana Buddhism. We understand that everything is marked with these, it has these three marks: permanence, non-self, and nirvana, or this very deep understanding that there's no birth and death, there's no coming and going, there's impermanence and non-self, and how each one builds on the other. Understanding impermanence helps us to understand non-self and emptiness, and then that understanding is what leads to this deeper awakening, this nirvana element. And we refer to that in actually in the teaching of ancestor James Baldwin, which was shared as the quote at the beginning of the announcement for last Sunday's sit. And in that quote, he really in there referenced the inability of the population to acknowledge that things aren't constant and how that brings a lot of suffering. And so it felt very ripe for expressing the Dharma through Ancestor Baldwin's words. And as we know, he was quite not just a philosopher, but quite the agent of change, always inviting us to wake up. So it was really nice to bring in the Buddhist elements into what we may think of non-Buddhists and see that they're really all part of it, right? They're all there in it. And this is the teaching of Nirvana, actually, right? Is to see everything in it, even if it doesn't appear that it's that, the signlessness, not getting caught. So today I wanted to continue this in another aspect, another way of looking at what happens when we don't get stuck in things, how that just opens just so many possibilities for deeper understanding, compassion. And so in our meditation today, we practice with compassion for someone, a beloved, someone we may might more easily have compassion for because we know them, we know their lives, maybe we know their suffering. And so it's often easier, right, to offer that for people we know and love. Where we get stuck is for the folks we don't know, and we certainly aren't holding much love in our hearts, right? Because we don't know them. And not just that, but they may do really like awful things, right? Like terrible things, things that are violent, hateful, and then we don't know them. So now we got, it's building up, right? We don't know them, then they do stuff that's harmful. And so then it's like, you know, how do you get compassion there, right? Like it's a real thing because you know, this is what the Dharma is telling us to do, by the way. Just saying. The Dharma invites us into that deep looking to be able to see the rose in the compost, and the compost in the rose. It's basically that's the translation into like everyday reality. Trump. Right? And all the different permutations of a Trump, because it's not just about Trump, right? It's a Trump. Just like oh, it's a beloved, there's a Trump. There's always a Trump. And so that's what, you know, like, can we see the flower in Mr. Trump? Yeah. It's a hard one. And yet, that's what the teachings invite us into. Because if we can see the three marks of existence in Trump, That's it. Can we see the what has brought him to that, the compassion, to look deeply and understand the roots of that system that has cultivated a Trump, the Trumps. So the spider web. So you'll have to bear with me because I didn't find this in the text. I found it on the porch, the spider webs, right? Sitting there, staring out and seeing the little spider webs. And I also have some indoor too, but my mom thinks that's unsanitary, but maybe not. They were here before me. So I was looking at the spider webs and I was looking at how how they were caught, things were caught in it. Things were caught in them, that's what happens with the spider web. So then I was thinking, wow, there's a reason for that. And then I went, of course, Google, the poor man's AI is what I call Google, or poor person's AI is Google for me. So I went to my AI, and because I want to be in, so can't get the chat thing. And so I Googled spider and web, and then I went into the rabbit hole on spider, and then I learned about the orb spiders and this spider, like 48,000 kinds of. It's too much. I really didn't need to go all there. But what I did learn when I stopped myself was this question of scientists doing this work of, does the spider have a mind? And how are they building these webs? And are these webs a continuation of their sense organs? Quite like our hands would be, like moving and feeling our way as we walk ahead, or the eyes, right? The eyes can see ahead. Oh, I won't go there because there's a pulse, like that, or a noise. I won't listen to that because, or it's too loud or something like that. So that the scientists now are saying that the webs are this continuation of the spider's sensing. Even the question, do they have a mind, or is this their the extension of their mind? But they have the brain of a seed, a sesame seed, or something like that. And so, of course, can't imagine that, because humans are so wonderful and big. Can't imagine a little spider would have a mind. But enough to say that there's some sensing that occurs with this spider web. So it's like this, it does things for the spider, for its survival. So all that was intriguing. I'm just sharing with you what I learned. The part, though, that was really fascinating to me was that the spider eats the web when it needs to. And then the very next day, at least, we're measuring it by human time, right? So who knows, it might be like another period of time, periodicity for the spider. It redoes another web. And so it eats the web when it doesn't have food or it's hungry, or it eats the web because it wants to create another web. But often it'll eat a web right there and then it'll put the web right back there again. So I found that really interesting. And then I thought, wow, so that spider is really creative and also very not stuck, right? That's the thing that made me think of the Dharma, was the spiders are not stuck. Like, they're able to weave these webs and also let them go. Like, they can see the impermanence of it, right? Because they're going to go and eat their web, and then they're going to put another one in. And then they show this how they do it. They scaffold it, and then they go in and fill it in. So it's really fascinating what they're doing. And this is what made me come back to three characteristics was the way that we build our own webs, right? What we weave into the scaffold of who we think we are, how we come to imagine our sense of selves as this permanent fixture of some sort, almost this crystallized being, right? I remember I was at a meeting a few months ago at Red Emma's, and for someone, another person who was there in the meeting, I don't know how it came up, but something came up and he said, oh yeah, I saw you, you know, you always wear a hat. And so it was like crystallized, right? Maricela and the hat, you know, like that's me, yeah? And I thought, man, like, can I never wear a hat now? Like, right? Like, is that who I am? Right? Because it was just this matter of fact identity, you know? But then I looked back and I thought, well, I do wear a hat all the time everywhere. Like, yeah. But this kind of crystallization of who we believe we are, and what we then get stuck in, and how we follow that, right? So I found myself questioning, like, why do you wear a hat all the time? Oh, okay, yeah. So I had melanoma, which is the bad skin cancer that can spread it internally. And so ever since then, which was back 07, I think, it was removed. And I was told I needed to always protect myself from the sun. So I started wearing a hat, and I never think twice about it now. I couldn't even remember until that day when this person characterized me as a person with the hat. And then I thought, why do I wear a hat? I had forgotten why I wore a hat. And then I remember, and then of course I was like, well, I'm gonna stop wearing this hat. And then I remembered, oh, right. So usually I wear hats and I wear long sleeve blouses, or very seldom do I have short sleeve unless I'm inside, and I wear long pants even when I go in the water, right? But people think I'm weird sometimes because I do that, because I don't have a sign that says I don't want to die from skin cancer. But this way that we get. So I even forgot, right? Like, I just, you know, we become that thing then, is what I'm saying. We just see ourselves, we even forget why it is we're doing it. So it's, and yeah, we can't walk around all the time, you know, that awareness. And yet, again, here's the teachings, right? Like, these are serious stuff. The teachings invite us to always walk around in that awareness, right? Why did the mind just have this thought? What brought it up? Do I want to maintain it? Right? No, this is not a thought I want to maintain. I won't do it again. Ah, this is a good thought. Yes, I want to repeat it. The teacher invites us into this continuous mindfulness of body, of feelings of mind, and of objects of mind. So much so that if we practice it, so I was studying the different iterations of the four establishments of mindfulness from the different schools. And one of them say, even for a half a day, right? It starts, if you practice this continuously for 7 years and 6 years, 5 years, four, like that. And I had in the one that we usually study and practice with in Plum Village, it's 2 weeks. But there's another one that says half a day. If you practice continuous awareness, it's a half a day to become enlightened, right? And so then that made a lot of sense to me, because I thought, yeah, because if you could like stay in that kind of continuous observation and awareness of mind and every single thing along the way, right? Not getting caught in the in this weaved net, this weaved web that we weave, and then it's there, and then we move within that web, right, in our lives. And as we get older, We may continue to build that web, but it builds from the original ones from when we were, yay high like this, because we're not in this awareness of noticing, maybe like the spider, like nobody knows why. I mean, we have an idea why the spider eats the web, okay? But maybe there's another reason the spider eats their web and then immediately spins another one. Or a different kind of web, right? Because there's like all these different kinds of webs. Who knew? I mean, there's names for them. Of course, there's names for them. Our human or ignorant little mind, myself, of course, don't know that until I read this. I was like, wow, yeah. There's the concentric ones. Those are the orb spiders. Don't think I know a lot. I just literally learned this stuff. Okay. Then there's the tunnel. They have these tunnel webs they build. And then there's like sheath ones. And so there's clearly this shifting of what needs to be done in the spider world. I really like Spider-Man too, the shows. But they don't get into that there. Anyway, so then comes back, right, for me, this kind of stuckness, the stuckness there, which what we're calling impermanence as one of the characteristics of the Dharma, and the inability to see what is making that up, right? That there's no permanent self, this non-self nature, this interbeing nature, everything's connected, right? It also made me like taking kind of on the metaphysical level or the ultimate dimension, like how does the spider's web interact with my web and the squirrel's web and the bird's web? Because we're all building our own, we're all weaving our own identities and worlds. We're scaffolding the things and the way we're going to move around in the world. And in some ultimate dimension, they're all interacting and they're having impact on each other, right? And so there's a way where this ability to see beyond our own world and maybe understand this connection allows us that ability to not get again crystallized, because that's kind of what we're talking about, is the permanent fixation on humanity as the, God, hero of the cosmos, and our, our delinquency and our ignorance of the earth as a species that requires love and care, and so this inability to really see all the interconnectedness, really is part of what, doesn't allow us to be kind to the earth and to perpetuate violence against the earth as we all do, just in ignorance, in this stuck perception and understanding of what humans are in and of themselves. So this brings us back to the Trump. Because in our web that we build, we have certain perceptions and we build certain crystallized formations of what is justice, who's good and who's bad, right? And we really stick with it. We think that's who that is. And I don't mean to pick on Trump, but he's so good to pick on because of ex, you know, he exhibits all these behaviors that, and he does and says all these things that are not, that are violent and harmful, right? And so there's many others like Trump, but he's a more public figure and he's like a real example of how we've kind of written him off, and that the Dharma invites us to look in and see what else is there. So it's not even what else It's like, it's not even just how did he become this person. It's kind of like in his process of the way his political analysis is being presented, and the results of that. What is in all that analysis? What else is there that can lead us into a place, not necessarily that is pointing to on its face, on its superficial value, right? Like, what else is there? What can come from something else? So what I'm saying is, often, it's the throwing away the, it's not a good term, but this analogy that people use, throwing away the baby with the bathwater. I mean, I think that's what stuckness is, actually. Is not being able to see what else is there and being stuck with just this one idea of what this person is, who this person is. And so we've thrown away anything else that might be there that this person brings, anything else. And not just what this person brings, but what his behavior or their behavior results in. Right? So if we can't get into that part of what else can this lead to, because we're stuck on them and who we say they are, we can't see what are the other possibilities that their behavior, I'm not negating the behavior is not, unjust, unfair, hate, filled with hatred, not negating that, saying yes, acknowledging that, and also saying, okay, where does this lead us? What else does it take us to? Can we see beyond just stamping them? You know how we don't want to get into it. We're just like, oh, he's just this, don't want to talk about it. Yeah. So we don't have to forever talk about Trump. But what we do want to do as agents of change is discern where it is, where in there is something else than what is being presented that keeps us stuck, keeps us unable to see beyond the thing that's there, the mark, right? The mark of those three marks, the three characteristics, right? The impermanence, the non-self, that leads us to this new, different understanding. Because what nirvana is as a mark is saying, is being able to go beyond the birth, the death, the up, the down, the black, the white. And these other two characteristics of impermanence and non-self are the two things that are supposed to help us along this path to reach that understanding. So that was a lot of pieces. That's what happens when you stare at spider and spider webs for a while. And yet I felt the spider was really inviting me to to understand it more and figure out how, in this way that they are showing up, they're part of this whole thing. They're part of the teachings, they're part of the trainings, actually. They're not there for nothing. And there is no chance occurrence. There's everything is there, and there's something from it. And so it's for us to discern it. So that's exactly what I'm saying, right? It's like, do we just see this? And because it doesn't fit in our web that we've weaved, we just leave it and just keep in that? Or are we able to really stop and just like be in wonder? Like a child, be in wonder, what else is there? And slowly begin to reweave our web and know that it can, change any time and be of use in certain way and not of other ways in other times. And knowing when we have to acknowledge the interconnections that are there, but that we, because of the way we've scaffolded ourselves, we can't really easily see it. We're stuck. And I think this is a case as well in race, in the way we deal with each other, in any intersectionality. in all the intersectionalities, actually. We're stuck. And we're, what the practice does is it allows us to get unstuck. At least that's what I've experienced with the practice over the years, is it allows me to move out of this web that I've weaved with all the caricatures and all the socialized way that we're told, and start to notice what else is there besides what I've been weaving, and that maybe it's okay to weave something different, right? My perceptions of white people and how stuck they are. Like, if I stay with that, I'm gonna stay with that, right? My perception of male gendered people and where they are and how stuck they are. So all those places where, especially where we've been, where there's harm been done, right? And marginalization's been done, where we've had to do some of that for survival. Like, how do we begin to, that web that we've been weaving, how do we begin to know and understand that there's places where we need to, like, take it apart a little bit so we can see what else is there? Because that's what the teachings are inviting us into. Like, it's nothing else but that. As we go along this path, that is, right? We go deeper. And we let it really penetrate into us. So we get that compassion, like the meditation, like penetrating into the suffering so that we are becoming into the experience, so we have the deeper understanding, so we can transform it and have the compassion. So we start with ourselves, like we did in the meditation. Because even for ourselves, we have certain perceptions that we hold, sometimes not nice, not kind. And so starting with our own very selves and how these things are stuck. And then as we start to unravel that, then being able to offer that out. Just like how we offer kindness out, we offer compassion out. Starting with those who it's more easy to understand because we know something about them. So when they do something that causes harm, we can more easily understand and have compassion. And so then as we continue that, we have to broaden the circle, just like we do when we offer metta, our loving kindness. You know, we go through the those we know, those we care for, like that, until, you know, strangers, and then even to those who we have difficulty with. And so it's the same with the compassion. We start with those who we care for, who we understand more, and then we broaden out. So thank you for your listening. I will invite the bell so we can breathe in and out mindfully and just let it all go back from where it came.